Good afternoon. Welcome to Building the Athlete. I'm Scott Benson, Hall of Fame athlete, Hall of Fame coach, and sports performance expert. On today's show, Cooper Bowman of the Oakland Athletics. We're going to get into it. We're going to talk about a lot of things baseball and a lot of things training. BensonSportsTraining.com. That's my company. That's where you need to go. BensonSportsTraining.com. Check it out. We have a full array of products, online training and coaching for multiple different sports and lots of different programs. I've had the pleasure in my several decades in this business of training over 400 professional and NCAA athletes. The whole purpose of this show is to educate parents, athletes, and coaches, and to help you get through all the noise. There's just so much information out there these days, and it's really hard to know what your athlete or you as an athlete should be doing to maximize your potential for greatness. So stay tuned for Cooper Bowman. We're going to get to that in a minute, and we're going to talk to Cooper about all things baseball, all things preparation, development, mindset, everything that goes with the things that we talk about. So stay tuned. Cooper Bowman coming up. Cooper Bowman, excited to talk to him. All right, welcome to Building the Athlete. Today's guest is Cooper Bowman of the Oakland A's. Cooper was a phenomenal high school athlete. He was American Legion Baseball Player of the Year in his home state and was also an All-State basketball player. Went on to play college baseball first at Iowa Western Junior College in Council Bluffs, Iowa, where they played in JUCO World Series, and then moved on to Louisville, where he played there and was an All-ACC second baseman. Drafted by the New York Yankees in the fourth round, Cooper started this year with the Cincinnati Reds and finished with the Oakland A's.
Founded in 2004, BBS Radio TV stands as a trailblazer in remotely engineered live radio broadcasts over the internet. We ignited the new media revolution, offering a powerful platform for vital voices and alternative perspectives that mainstream media often silences. Our live broadcasts stream on over 200 of the world's largest internet broadcast stations, with on-demand syndication across all major social networks. Visionary entrepreneurs Douglas and Donald Newsom have crafted over 100,000 radio and web TV episodes for more than 1,000 satisfied clients. Experience the pinnacle of web radio and TV engineering. Compare our unbeatable prices, exceptional services, and comprehensive offerings with any other professional provider, and you'll see why we're unparalleled in the industry. Call us at 1-800-338-4393.
BBS Radio TV. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio TV, a place for answers.
So, Cooper, welcome to the show. Glad to have you, and would like you to go over anything I missed as an introduction.
Well, thanks for having me. I think this is a really cool idea. You kind of nailed it on the head. I grew up in Rapid City, born in Lee Deadwood, a little smaller town even before that. You know, I committed to University of Hawaii originally out of high school, and whole staff left. And I think my first taste of the college business was that, trying to get out of that little predicament, and was semi-forced to go JUCO, but it ended up honestly being the best thing that could have happened. And yeah, from there you had it. Over to Louisville for a year, drafted to the Yankees, year and a half spent over there, got traded over to the A's at the end of 22. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll get into it, but then the business side of baseball kicked in and I got a shot with the Reds and then ended up ultimately coming back to the A's.
Okay. Awesome. Well, welcome to the show. I appreciate you taking the time. So before we get into training and baseball and development and all those fun things, I got to ask you, what'd you think of the World Series?
You know, we were actually talking about it today, and it's hard to say that that wasn't the best seven game series of all time. I mean, from the big hits to the big defensive plays to starters pitching on 0 days rest, I mean, it was things I've never seen before.
Yeah.
It was very entertaining.
Do you think Kiki catches that ball in left field?
According to his interviews, he says yes.
He says a lot of things in his interviews.
He does. Apparently, he's the little glue of that team. You know, I would say no. Off the bat, I thought it was dropping. Talk about drama, first of all. Have a center fielder who just got subbed into the game young kid. He's like 24 years old, and he has to go make a jumping catch over his teammate to save the season. I mean, it really doesn't get more dramatic than that. But no, to answer your question, I didn't think he was catching it.
Yeah, that's just the baseball. The way the baseball gods work is it Pajes or the center fielder? You know, he had been sat because he couldn't hit anything throughout the series, and then gets back in and gets that opportunity, and he saves the game. He saves the World Series. So that was awesome. I haven't seen anything like that before. It was fun to watch it knowing you were watching something special, and capped off by a home run from a Louisville alumni. So that's gotta be pretty cool. That probably had you cheering a little bit.
You know, I can't say I was rooting for the Dodgers, but it was pretty cool to see him do that.
Yeah. Well, great series. Does anybody throw a straight fastball anymore?
No way. They're either, you know, the baseball term is ride, where it's perceived rising at you. Obviously, the physics of it, it's not, but that's the way the eye sees it. And you, of course, you have the two seams and the sinkers and the cut fastballs. And it's pretty rare to find a straight one these days.
So what's your approach if you're going up there and you're facing a guy that's got, you know, he's throwing 98 to 100 with, you know, 10 inches of movement on it?
Yeah, you know, that's where it's hard for us. Every day we try to figure out the approaches for these guys. And it's very dependent. You know, sometimes you got to go up there and you got to guess pitches. Some of these guys are just so good, and they make the stuff move so much, and they make it look so similar to their other pitches that you have to almost guess pitches and then still try to square it up. But yeah, when these guys are throwing 100, the old saying is stay on the fastball, but how can you? These sliders are moving 18 inches. You know, the plate's only, what, 14 to 16, I think. So it's moving more than the actual plate itself. You know, it's hard to just stick to one approach, but man, these guys are just getting good.
You made a comment. You know, their pitches are all similar. So, you know, when I played 100 years ago, obviously, you know, off speed, you were looking for laces. And to me, it seems like nowadays that the sliders are so tight and the way that they're throwing, can you pick up on things like that anymore? Talk to me about that.
Yeah. Do you know the good ones? I would say no, because the pitcher's whole plan is they want to make all their pitches look the same when it comes out of their hand. Because, you know, we have less than half a second to make a decision if we want to swing and then actually square it up. So their whole goal is those first 30 feet that the ball's moving, they want their slider, fastball, changeup, whatever, to come out the same. It's called tunneling. And yeah, I mean, you'll catch guys with maybe like a bigger curveball and it has to pop out of their hand, and you can kind of catch some breaks on guys like that. But for the most part, it's a lot of guys talk about color. So on a fastball, the ball spins white at you because it's spinning so fast that you can't see the laces, and the sliders and the changeups spin a little slower, their RPM's a little less, so you can kind of see some red in there. But yeah, I mean, I've heard guys talk about hand positioning, you know, sliders, fastballs, changeups, but for the most part, you just got to try to see it early. It's quite the challenge.
Yeah. Is it the hardest thing to do in sports?
I may be biased, but I think so.
I'd agree with you. Okay, so who's the best pitcher you've ever faced? Who was somebody you went up against and just said, wow, I hope I get lucky here?
Yeah, I have a funny story about it. Max Scherzer, first ballot Hall of Famer, obviously. In 2024, he's rehabbing down in AAA, and I get the pleasure of facing him, of course. And so he strikes me out the first at-bat, and he gets through the lineup, 12 retired in a row, maybe 13. I come back up, and I get down 0-2 right away because, I mean, first of all, he's got the different colored eyes, so it's intimidating as heck. You would have thought it was, you know, he pitched game 7 of the World Series last week. You would have thought it was the same deal. It was very impressive how into it and how focused and intense he was for just a rehab outing. So anyways, I get down 0-2, and the new pitch clock is kind of a thing at this time in 2024. So the pitch clock is about to hit 0. Catcher throws up his arms and starts running out there because he can take a timeout. Pitch clock won't run out because if it does, I get a ball. Scherzer waves him back. He's yelling at him. He's like, no, stay there. Stay, like, I'm fine. So I'm in the box like, dang, this guy doesn't even care if it's 1-2. Like, he doesn't care at all. He's going to do the same thing and get me out. And believe it or not, next pitch, slider, looks like a fastball the whole way, and, you know, gets this far off the plate, and I swing and miss, and I'm out. I'm just like, man, this guy he's so confident. He knows he's so good, and he has so many ways of getting all of us out that he doesn't even care if it's 0-2, 1-2, 2-2. Doesn't even matter to him.
And so he How many innings did he pitch?
He threw 4 perfect, and it was his last rehab outing before going back up to the big leagues. So he, the other half of that story is the last batter he faced, he intentionally walked him. Like, before the guy even gets in the box, he throws up 4, gets him on first base, and we're all in the dugout like, why would you do that? You're perfect through 4. No one's gotten on base. We later realized that he just wanted to work out of the stretch a little bit. So he threw 1 hitter out of the stretch, struck him out, and haven't seen him since.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. He definitely competes at a different intensity level. You could just see it. And, you know, I'm guessing that kid, you know, if he's playing against his kids and something, he's taking him to the cleaners.
That's right.
That's just, it's a mindset. I talked to a lot of athletes about that. And, you know, is that something, once you got to, let's say, the Division I level, is that a pretty constant thing with most of the players you've played with? You know, just that mental strength and that confidence?
I actually wouldn't say it's as common as a lot of people would think. I think a lot of guys get there, truthfully, from just overwhelming talent. But then I think the next jump to the pro level is where, you know, that starts to play a bit more of a factor, especially in baseball. I mean, it's 162 games for those guys in the big leagues. And if you don't have something wrong with you in your head, it's hard to lock in and be that intense that often. But yeah, for the D1 level, for sure, there are definitely guys like that. And I think I was somewhat like that. And I think that's the reason I got there. But no, you see guys who are just simply better than everyone else. A lot of times they figure it out later in their career and make the jump. And I've also seen guys where they don't have that switch in their head and they kind of get stuck at that level. So. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about, what do you see in just the difference, let's just say, between A ball, double A, triple A, bigs? What is the biggest difference once you make those jumps?
It's a question a lot of guys ask, actually. And I think it's important that it's known that it really isn't the talent. I would argue the talent in low A, high A is arguably just as good as triple A. Obviously, I haven't been to the big leagues yet, so I can't say. But the difference is really little things. It's the actual game, not the size, speed, strength. It's can a pitcher get ahead early? Can a hitter learn how to take a slider off the plate? If you have a low A, you know, prospect and a guy on the verge of making it to the big leagues, go hit BP, you may not notice much of a difference. But if you watch them take 100 at bats, you'll be like, okay, I can see, you know, the triple A guy's more disciplined. He has a plan. He has an approach. I think it's more in the head at that level than really physically. And I think, again, that's one thing that can separate guys. Like, it'll propel guys forward. It'll really hold them back.
So you say once you get to the professional level, it's the game, not so much the athleticism, the size, speed, and strength. But are you getting there without that?
Oh, certainly not. No. I should have probably said that. Every player here has size, speed, and strength. You know, it's not up for grabs. It's not something you can get by without. No. It's probably the most important thing. But at some point, when you look around, everyone has it.
Everybody's good.
It's like, yeah, so it's like, well, now how do I separate myself? You know, before I could just be stronger, faster, jump higher. In a game like baseball, it just doesn't really work out that way. But no, you're definitely not getting there without it.
Okay. All right. I introduced you as obviously a baseball player, but then I also mentioned that you were an all-state basketball player as well. So I love the multi-sport debate. And I might be one of the in the minority debating you don't have to be a multi-sport athlete. And let me explain that before I have you comment. So I hear, you know, guys like Nick Saban and Urban Meyer, you know, talking about how you got to be a multi-sport athlete if you want to make it to the college level. And I can't get on board with those guys saying that, because they're dealing with the genetic one percenters, the guys that they're so talented, so big, so strong, so fast that in high school they could just go out. You know, if they're a football player, they could go out for basketball and just lock somebody down because of physicality, or, you know, go play baseball or go run track and not have to put a lot of time into it to be a star. And that's not real world. That's not the 99% that have to work hard to excel at anything. So I'm not a huge fan of that. I think if you're not really looking to play college athletics, that part of it's not important to you, then yeah, go play everything, have a great time, contribute to your team. But when we're talking about kids that are saying, look, I want to go play college baseball. I want to go play college basketball, whatever it may be. Coaches are demanding. They want touches on those kids all year round. And so what I see happen is, you know, I've got kids that come in and they've got basketball open gym in the morning. They got a baseball game later in the day, and then they've got football 7-on-7 that night. And they're in the gym trying to train, and they end up being very mediocre at everything because they're tired all the time and they're just so spread out. They can never excel. What is your take on that?
You know, I'm actually more probably on the play multiple sports side, but I do think you make a great point. Like, I think when the Sabins of the world are saying those things, like, you're right. Like, he's only speaking with guys who are physically good enough to go to a school like that and play at that level. So that is a good point. I'd have to agree that, you know, I've seen it plenty of times who, you know, just growing up in a smaller town like Rapid, where guys want to go play college baseball, college basketball, whatever it is, but they're playing three sports and the skill level just never really got there for them. So I think you make a great point. For me personally, I thought doing multiple was great, but, you know, I would argue I got more reps in than most kids at that age. So if you're going to do both or three, four, whatever it is, you're going to have to drop a lot of other things. You know, you're not going to be able to go to the parties and you're not going to be able to do all those extra things. That's your life now. So I think you make a good point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the problem is when these kids get so spread out, athletic development gets put on the back burner. That's the thing that goes. They're tired. They don't have time for it. And I'm sorry, but with the new NCAA regs and, you know, NIL, as a 17 or 18 year old, you are competing against 23 year olds for that job. And if you think you're going to get to that level and you're going to skip the gym, it's not going to happen anymore. It's a much different world. And so I should have prefaced by saying, you know, I think recruiting is forever changed. I don't have a problem, you know, middle school, freshman, sophomore, you can be checking everything out and seeing what you like. But, you know, once you get to that, you know, sometimes sophomore, but junior, senior year, you kind of know where you're headed. And I always think it's awesome for kids to play one team sport and one individual sport. So you get the aspect of both of those and you learn how to play with the team, but you also learn how to compete on your own when you don't have a team to fall back on. And of course, I'm not saying you can only play one sport. I think every athlete is different and they have, you know, different ways that it's going to work for them. Just wanted to get your opinion on it. I know it continues to be in the media where they're preaching that you have to be a multi-sport athlete. And I guess, like everything else, I just ask why. You know, how is that going to benefit you?
I think that's a great point, especially with the new college rules. I mean, you got guys who are on their sixth year of eligibility playing, and an 18-year-old can't come into a university and look like an 18-year-old anymore. There's just no spots for that. You know, they'd rather go get a 20-year-old from a junior college or something. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. If playing multiple sports is going to set you back physically or even skillfully, like if you go into a University of Louisville as a freshman and, you know, your skill level isn't a few years advanced, it's going to be tough for you. So I do think all these rules are probably going to end up trickling down and affecting high school sports as well.
Yeah. Well, now you won't even go to the University of Louisville because right now Division I's and a lot of Division II's, they're not even looking high school anymore. They're going to the portal. If you're a high school athlete and you cannot contribute immediately, you better start looking JUCO. You better start looking NAIA. And then, you know, you can always enter the portal later on. But what I can tell you with absolute certainty is if you're not in the gym, you're not getting stronger and faster, you've got no chance because you're competing against men and women, growing men and women. The other thing you said, you know, like walking into a Louisville situation. In the SEC last year, the average freshman was, I believe, 6'3", 210 pounds. That's the average freshman. So you better be a dude walking into those programs or you're not even going to get considered for it. So,
absolutely.
Founded in 2004, BBS Radio TV stands as a trailblazer in remotely engineered live radio broadcasts over the internet. We ignited the new media revolution, offering a powerful platform for vital voices and alternative perspectives that mainstream media often silences. Our live broadcasts stream on over 200 of the world's largest internet broadcast stations, with on-demand syndication across all major social networks. Visionary entrepreneurs Douglas and Donald Newsom have crafted over 100,000 radio and web TV episodes for more than 1,000 satisfied clients. Experience the pinnacle of web radio and TV engineering. Compare our unbeatable prices, exceptional services, and comprehensive offerings with any other professional provider, and you'll see why we're unparalleled in the industry. Call us at 1-800-338-4393. BBS Radio TV, a pioneer of new media production since 2004. We're not just changing lives, we're rattling cages. Tune in to a sitting senator, a bishop, doctor, a lawyer, even a celebrity host going from A to Z on the information spectrum. Here at BBS Radio TV, your world is about to expand. From metaphysical politics to 3D chess, we cover the full spectrum of mind candy to set you free. Oh, and one more thing. Call 1-800-338-4393 to become a talk show host.
BBS Radio TV. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio TV, a place for answers.
So let's talk a little bit about you personally. I'd like to start with your story as a JUCO baseball player at Iowa Western. 2020, COVID hits and shortens your season. So let's just kind of walk through that and talk about, you know, where you were at, what was going through your head, and the changes that you made with your training.
Yeah. When I was at JUCO, I basically went to a baseball academy. Class a couple times a week, but the priority was baseball, lifting, get big, get strong. So I probably threw on 30 to 35 pounds in my year and a half to 2 years there. So it's I wouldn't say it's like the smartest type of lifting or training, but it's very intense. It's very serious. Yeah, that was a rude awakening for a 170 pound kid coming in who, you know, we've talked about it, wishes he could go back and do a little more in high school. We did a lot, but I don't think I was fully bought in. So COVID happens, you know, I'm 210 pounds and I'm big and strong. I can move a lot of weight, but the only thing I could think of, and this was our first conversation, was I just can't move, you know? And in a sport like baseball, if you're not nimble, if you can't rotate, if you have bad hips, whatever it is, you know, it's obviously going to come bite you in the butt. And anyone who knows me well has heard this before. I truly think the summer of COVID changed my entire career. I think I could have gone to Louisville, had a fine year, had a fine career, whatever, get picked up, you know, give it a shot. But I think the way that we transitioned my just brute strength into athleticism, speed, jumping, it changed my whole career. I was always a fast kid, but up until that year, or after that year, I should say, speed became my identity in baseball. And it got me drafted higher. It got me to move up levels. I mean, truthfully, it put money in my pocket. You know, I think there's a lot of good ways to get big and strong and do all these things, but at a certain point in time, as you get older, you have to be able to confine it down to your sport. How do you need to move? You know, I don't need to look like a football player, and a football player doesn't need to look like me. I think it's very different. So yeah, that summer, it changed my life, really.
So I'm thinking back, season shut down, you got back to town. I remember you calling me, and I remember you saying, I don't feel like I felt in high school. I don't feel as explosive as I felt in high school. And if I remember correctly, you were about 208, 210 pounds. And I think one of the first things I said to you was, we're going to lose weight. We're not going to lose strength, but we're going to spend a lot of time out at the track. And I'm going to treat you like a track athlete. And is that kind of how you remember it?
I think that's exactly how it went, yeah.
So I remember everything was closed. So I remember lifting in my basement.
Yeah.
That's where we did our lifting sessions. But tell me your recollection of what we did in those track workouts and those speed workouts.
You know, I think a huge part of it was just learning how to run. I'd actually backtrack to what we were talking about earlier, hitting a baseball is one of the hardest things to do in sports. I think running correctly is right up there. I mean, anyone can run, but when you look at these, track athletes, these Olympians, these college guys, like, not everyone can move like that. It's a learned skill for sure, but you'd be amazed at how much it cleans up and how much faster you can get and how the risk of injury will go down. For sure, we got after it intensity wise, but if I remember correctly, I think majority of it was cleaning up how the body moves. Man, once you clean it up a little, I noticed it probably that second half of that summer, you just exponentially go. I mean, the power, the speed, the strength. Once you kind of figure out really what you're doing, it flies.
Yeah, yeah. And I do kind of remember we did a lot of drills, a lot of tech where we were, working through angles and all of that with acceleration, did a lot of wicket runs. And then we just got you out on the track and got you running. And, it's funny. When I work with young athletes, I'll ask them, well, who taught you how to hit a baseball? And my dad did. Okay. Well, who taught you how to shoot a basketball? Oh, my coach did, and I'll go through that. And then I'll ask him, well, who taught you how to run? And I'll get an absolute blank stare.
Yep.
And then, one of them will inevitably stay speak for the group and say, I taught myself. And one of the most important things that we do in any sport and the thing that separates athletes at every level is self-taught. So I see moms and dads taking kids to every sport camp in the world, dropping $10,000 a summer for a kid that can't move. And it really doesn't make any sense. But I think we label kids too early that, fast or not fast. So I'm going to get your opinion on that, but we're going to take a quick break. So we'll be right back. All right. We're back with Building the Athlete with Cooper Bowman of the Oakland Athletics. We are talking speed. We are talking the COVID summer when Cooper made a huge change in his training methodology and kind of decided he wanted to be faster, wanted to be more explosive, talking about that summer and how we trained. So from what I was saying, Cooper, as far as, development of speed, talk a little bit more about, number one, at 20 years old or however how hard was it to relearn how to run the right way?
It's really difficult. Anyone can just go out there and run and think, well, I'm fast. I beat most kids at, top of the line, whatever, and everything's fine. And I was the same way. But when you start running with trained runners who really know what they're doing, it really doesn't matter how strong or explosive you are. You can't really keep up. And it took me a couple of weeks to be able to keep up with, Hyde, obviously. We were training with him every day. And it's such a difference maker. And I think at first I was a little skeptical, truthfully, because I didn't really think that the perfect running was maybe necessary for baseball. Boy, was I wrong, though, because it plays everywhere. It plays to your athleticism. It plays to keeping your body healthy and lower risk of injury. Obviously, it plays to speed. It's again, like I said, I think it's a skill that's one of the hardest to learn in all of sports.
Were you, prior to making that change, were you a huge base stealing threat?
I would say I was a base stealer. I wouldn't really call it a threat. I could move. I've always been able to move a little, but after that summer going into Louisville, it really became more of an identity. More, you can tell as soon as I get on, this guy's picking over, he's slide stepping, and it didn't even really help me in some circumstances, but it would help my teammates because this guy on the mound's thinking about me. Thinking about, maybe I'll run to third, maybe I'll run to second, whatever it is. And then he grooves a heater, they rip a double and you start scoring runs. So no, I wouldn't say it was a massive part of my game, but for the last 5 years, it's been the main part of my game. Yeah. It's the reason I'm still playing.
That's good. When you came back to me during COVID, you were very, very strong. I don't remember. I know you were squatting 500 pounds. You were deadlifting 500 pounds. I can't remember exactly, within my program, we do a lot of Olympic lifts. I don't remember if that's something we had to kind of learn and progress. But talk a little bit about, because I always say that I train powerlifting track athletes. I like heavy lifting. I'll argue about that all day long with these guys that want to talk about their functional strength. And, it just, the stronger you are, the more force you can produce, the faster, more explosive you're going to be. So tell me how that's been a part of your training as far as, you know, through college, heavy in the weight room, into the professional, you know, ranks. How do you move weight now compared to how you did, you know, 5 years ago? And then we'll briefly talk again about Olympic lifts as well.
A huge part of my training every year still. And everyone around me, same idea. I mean, you got to lift heavy. It's just the easiest way to learn how to produce force, I think. Now, can I still squat 500 pounds? Probably not. You know, am I still getting after it? And, you know, obviously once you get to the pro level, it's a little more constricted. You know, they're a little more concerned about something happening. But that when you're younger, if you don't lift heavy in high school, you're going to have a rude awakening when you go to college. I really believe that. It's wildly important. I've never met an athlete that doesn't do it. And then the Olympic lifts, you know, I'm a huge fan of them. I think it's the best way to get explosive. We used to do Olympic lifts with plyos, and you know, I wish I had the exact numbers. There's no way I wasn't jumping 10 inches higher after the COVID summer than I was at the start. And that translates directly to the box. It translates to the field, to the basketball court, all those things. So yeah, I mean, if you're not doing these things before college, I can only really say good luck, because it's going to be hard for you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is, and I can speak to the Division I level and so can you, you're going to spend as much time in the weight room as you are on the field, on the track. For me, I've seen a lot of people who, based off of just natural freakish talent, make it to the Division I level with never going into a weight room or starting and stopping and never getting serious about it. They get to the college level and their body can't adapt. Their body just cannot handle being in the weight room 3 or 4 days a week, and it ends up ending their career. Is that something you saw?
Yeah, I really have. I saw it at the JUCO level and the D1 level. And I think we touched on it a little earlier where, you know, sometimes in baseball specifically, there's, as you get older, the separators are more between the years than your body. But yeah, if that's not something that you hit before you get to college and adapt your body to, yeah, I think it'll wreck you. I think mentally it's hard. Physically, of course, it's hard. I think physically it can be compromising if you don't have that good base, because you're going into this university with 21, 22, 23-year-olds who have done it for 4 years. So it's, I would say it's the most important thing a high school athlete can do.
You made a point a minute ago. You talked about, we were talking about Olympic lifts and plyometrics and how your vertical jump went up so much. And this is a good one with baseball. And I train a lot of baseball players, and doing plyos and doing Olympics. And I've heard high level strength coaches argue this point, that why am I jumping over hurdles as a baseball player? Why am I doing Olympic lifts as a baseball player? How is that going to translate? And what people don't understand is triple extension, explosive, high velocity movement is going to translate into any way that your body moves. And I think that's such a big misnomer in baseball that, you know, if you give me a guy with a 40-inch vertical jump, I can pretty well guarantee you he's going to have the highest exit velo on the team. And so you have to understand that, you know, extending through the ankle, through the knee, through the hip is no different than getting the hips all the way through a swing. And that power is that last bit of hip extension. And that's what's taught in plyometrics and Olympic lifts. And that's why they translate so well to baseball. Give me your take on that.
I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, I hope that there's guys from your gym listening to this later on, because I think when I got drafted by New York and I went in and the first month was all training, building foundations for a lot of guys, I was at such an advantage because I already had this plyometric background, this heavy lifting experience and all these different things, where I was just steps ahead of guys from a physical standpoint right when I walked in. And so, you know, I don't know many gyms or many places, especially for high school kids, that are doing those things. But if I didn't do them, you know, I would have been behind the eight ball. I almost can't stress enough how important I really think it is. You know, I can't speak for every sport, but I would guess that it translates to every sport. You know, if you, with the triple extension that you were speaking of, if you can do that just forcefully and explosively, I would imagine that that translates to any sort of movement, any sort of body movement, whether it's rotational, you know, baseball's a little, you got a little lateral quickness left and right, similar to basketball. You know, to me, it is in every sport.
I want to ask you, you told me a story one time, and I'm going to mess this up. So, you know, for our listening audience, you know, we're broadcasting in New York City. They're either going to really like you because you got drafted by the Yankees, or they've already turned it off because you got traded by the Yankees. But for those that are still listening, you told me a story one time about when you got down to camp in Florida, and the first day of camp, they had you doing all the speed drills that we were doing those previous summers. Tell me about that.
It was hilarious. First of all, it was the very basic stuff that we learn at your gym when we're in middle school. You know, it was wall marches, it was dribbles, it was, you know, the different types of skips. And I didn't realize how lucky I was to get that, you know, beforehand experience until that day. When I was like, man, I got guys here who they're signed for a lot of money, but they don't know what they're doing. Like, they don't know what this is. Like, what an advantage for me having 6 years of this type of experience. So, and you know, it's the Yankees. They're going to do everything better than everybody else. They're going to hire the best people. They're going to have the best training. And so it was pretty eye-opening for me to almost do the exact same workouts that I've been doing right when I get to the top of the top, you know, the cream of the crop, as they say there. From a training standpoint, not a whole lot changed for me, which I thought was really just more of a compliment towards you and Hunter and Drew and, you know, everyone who got Benson doing what they do. It's just a little hidden nugget in South Dakota that more people should be aware of, because to me, I got to go to the best team that develops kids in my sport. And the very first thing we did was things I've done since I was 14. So,
and it got you noticed right away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if I remember correctly, I think strength and conditioning guys talked to you.
Yeah, and you know, they asked about you, and I believe they got in touch with you that winter because I was coming back home to train, and it, you know, they were impressed from almost more of a knowledge standpoint. Just not that I know the science behind all of it and all of that, but just the fact that I had been exposed to it for so long. And you know, I've said it before, and people have laughed, but I really don't think I'm still playing if it's not for all those years of experience, because I was just ahead of so many guys in so many ways, and it's just become a complete part of my game. Yeah, truly lucky.
Yeah, and just to be clear here, we're not talking about just the new guys for the Yankees. It was everybody.
Everybody.
And they were, we're not going to name names, but struggling with drills that we consider fairly simple.
It was just very eye-opening to me that I was like, wow, that kind of training is not everywhere. But if these guys are doing it, that's probably the right thing to do.
Yeah. And, you know, it just goes back to my point. Who taught you how to run? Guys either are fast or they're not fast. They get labeled that way and they don't ever work on it. And speed training is one of the most underutilized modalities in all of sports performance. You know, you get the football teams that they run some sprints after practice, and that's not speed training, that's conditioning. You know, speed training is about quality, it is about teaching, and you know, it's one of the reasons that we've been able to launch a national online coaching program, because there is just not a lot of people out there pushing the speed training side of it. And it is a game changer. And you hear the line all the time, speed kills. We heard the line today from you, speed pays, okay? Speed pays. Speed got you paid more money in the draft. And that was the other thing I was going to say is, you know, you went through all that training and you go to the MLB Combine and you run the second fastest, was it a 30-yard or 60-yard dash?
Yeah, and, you know, show me a scout that doesn't love that.
Right.
You know? And not, I'm not trying to even toot my own horn, but if I'm a scout, you know, speed kills, speed plays at every position, every sport. Like it's a very valuable tool. And I would argue the kids that are already in college or hoping to play in college, if you don't think that the little technical differences in running really matters, I really think you should reconsider, because you can have two guys who are equally as fast. And if you do 6 months of correct training, learning how to move correctly, and you don't even necessarily get more powerful yourself, I would guarantee you're faster than the other kid. It plays such a big role in my sport specifically. Now, if I'm stealing a base, the margin for error is 1/4 of a second. You know, maybe if you can clean up one or two steps in those 90 feet, you're going to be safe 90% more of the time, whatever it is.
Well, I've had the conversation with you, you know, at the level that you're playing at, you know the catcher's pop time, you know whether it's a guy you can steal a base on or not, because you have metrics on everything. And when we talk about speed training, we're talking about really teaching how to accelerate over 10 yards. Those first 3, 4, 5 steps, how to get yourself in the right position to maximize your acceleration mechanics. And so now we're talking about, you know, we're taking off hundredths of a second, but that's the difference between, you know, maybe 10 additional stolen bases a year. And I think that's very, very important. Not done with this subject yet, but let's take another quick break. We will be right back.
Founded in 2004, BBS Radio TV stands as a trailblazer in remotely engineered live radio broadcasts over the internet. We ignited the new media revolution, offering a powerful platform for vital voices and alternative perspectives that mainstream media often silences. Our live broadcasts stream on over 200 of the world's largest internet broadcast stations, with on-demand syndication across all major social networks. Visionary entrepreneurs Douglas and Donald Newsom have crafted over 100,000 radio and web TV episodes for more than 1,000 satisfied clients. Experience the pinnacle of web radio and TV engineering. Compare our unbeatable prices, exceptional services, and comprehensive offerings with any other professional provider, and you'll see why we're unparalleled in the industry. Call us at 1-800-338-4393. BBS Radio TV, a pioneer of new media production since 2004. We're not just changing lives, we're rattling cages. Tune in to a sitting senator, a bishop, doctor, a lawyer, even a celebrity host going from A to Z on the information spectrum. Here at BBS Radio TV, your world is about to expand. From metaphysical politics to 3D chess, we cover the full spectrum of mind candy to set you free. Oh, one more thing. Call 1-800-338-4393 to become a talk show host.
BBS Radio TV. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio TV, a place for answers.
All right, we're back with Building the Athlete, Cooper Bowman of the Oakland Athletics. Still talking speed. One point that I wanted to make is, Cooper, you had made the comment that you could always move a little bit. You weren't slow, but we're talking refining and becoming as efficient as possible in our movement. So, you know, let's just say, and I'm guessing these numbers, I don't know this, but I bet I'm fairly close. You were probably, you know, prior to getting into speed training, you were probably like a 6'7", 6'8", 60-yard dash guy. Is that close?
Yeah, I think you're pretty much spot on, actually.
Yeah, and then I'm willing to bet when you went to the MLB Combine, you ran a 30 there, but I bet you would have ran in that 6'3" neighborhood. And
yes.
So we're talking, you know, 3/10, 4/10, which that's a lot of time over those distances. But from a college coach's perspective, the athlete that's 6'8 and the athlete that's 6'4, it is a world of difference from a recruiting standpoint. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree. And, you know, I'll stick to baseball because it's what I know. Even a tenth of a second, let's say you went from a 6'8 to a 6'7, that'll steal you an extra 5 to 10 bags a year. And I don't think people realize how much those little things really contribute to the outcome of a game. I think a perfect example is Game 7 of the World Series. Isaiah Kalefa was on third, bottom of the ninth, one out, ground ball to the second baseman. You can see there's a video right behind him. You know, it's an important situation. So it's hard to, you know, be perfectly sound mechanically, but he's kind of running all over the place and, you know, swerving down the line, and he was out by inches. And, you know, you burn a tenth of a second off that, you might win a World Series.
Yeah,
obviously that's a big example, but I mean, I've noticed it massively throughout my career, just the amount of times I've been safe by an inch or two where I know previously, you know, I'm out by an inch or two, if that's the case. So, you know, like you said, speed pays and speed kills. It's the number one tool in any sport to me.
Why do you think it's so undertrained or underutilized?
It's a great question. I think you had a good point where guys get put into a bucket early on. You're either fast or you're not. I've heard plenty of guys say, I try to be fast, but you know, you can't teach it. You kind of can teach it. I would disagree, actually. Of course, there's some sort of aspect of genetics in there, but everyone can get faster. You know, it's not the pretty thing to do. It's not necessarily the enjoyable thing to do for a lot of guys. I think more people would rather just go lift, go squat, deadlift, whatever it is, which are all also important. But you and I have discussed it a lot. Sprinting is the most, you know, quick twitch thing you can do. And if that's not in every sport, then, you know, I'd have to disagree again. I think that's the number one key in every sport is quick twitch, like getting off the ground, getting down the court, whatever it is. So it may not be pretty or fun, but it's important.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's the most important thing. And I've built a business off of it for the last 16 years and we'll continue to do that moving forward. And that's what this show is all about. It's cutting through all the noise out there, all the new fads that are never going to work. It always goes back to training the right things, working hard, and being consistent. So great talk about speed. I want to shift gears a little bit right now. You and I have spoke in depth about mental approach. You know, we've read books. We've had all kinds of discussions about, you know, what it takes. We've talked a little bit today about just mental approach. You know, how do you hit the pitching today? It's just crazy with that. But you know, as far as a professional athlete, looking back on your mental approach and mental strength, what do you wish you would have learned at a younger age?
Yeah, that's a great question. The baseball world, you have to learn how to fail. Of course, I think any coach would tell you that. And you know this better than anyone. The last maybe year and a half of my career has been mentally harder on me than any other time I've ever played the game. And so, you know, the things you can learn at a young age of learning how to let things go, learning how to get to the next pitch. And it's so cliche to say, but those are real tools that kids can use. You know, it's hard. You can go down a tunnel of bad thoughts. Speaking of thoughts, I would actually love to point out, I don't know if anyone is a Mookie Betts fan. I'm not necessarily the huge, you know, biggest fan of him being on the Dodgers, but when I hear him talking about his mentality during games, they interviewed him after game 7 and they were like, what were you thinking, you know, before the last pitch was thrown? Cause it was hit to him. And he turned a double play. And he said he was telling himself, be nasty, be nasty, be nasty. Ball got hit to him. And then he just played. And like, I think that's so cool because I know how hard it is to do in a game, let alone when you're struggling. The guy was hitting under 100 in the World Series. He was really struggling, but for him to be able to just continue to tell himself like, be nasty, you're the guy, whatever it is it's something I'm for sure going to try out. You know, I've done the talking to myself in the field, but just relentless positivity, I think is such a key. And I would for sure say I haven't even learned it myself. I have plenty of moments of weakness and it's a failing game. It's mentally very hard, but just the more positivity you can bring to yourself and the more you can talk yourself up is easily the best way to get through this sport.
What's the toughest setback you faced as a baseball player?
You know, this was the first time this year was the first time in my career where I was not an everyday guy. And that was pretty tough for me mentally. I'm used to being, you know, the leadoff everyday second baseman, center fielder, whatever it is. So this was the first time where I was like, huh, other guys can fill that role. And it's a very hard thing to combat. It shouldn't be, but it was, just because I was so used to having that luxury for so many years. And I think it took me a couple months really to get myself out of that hole and realize that feeling bad for yourself or pouting, like, it's not going to do you any favors. And it's not going to do any of your teammates any favors. No one wants to be around it. No one wants to hear it. And the quicker people can learn that, not only is it hurting them, but it's crushing you, even though you may not realize it. You know, it took me months to realize the thoughts I was having and the approach I was having towards days I knew I wasn't going to play ultimately hurt me when, you know, you just, for me, I just ended up having to be thankful I was there. and take the opportunities I got. And once I changed that mindset, it changed my whole year. And it definitely gave me a lot to think about going into next season, because that's how this game is. There's only so many spots. Same with every sport. There's only so many starting spots. There's only so many guys. So at this level, you have to be okay with filling in every once in a while and plugging in where you're asked, but having the same mentality that Mookie has, like, you know, I'm nasty. Like, this is what I'm here for, stuff like that.
Yeah. So we talked about how difficult it is to hit a baseball, how difficult it is to hit major league pitching now. If you're not dialed in mentally, there's no way. There's just no way you can do this sport. And so I know that it's so mental, and as athletes, we all go through ups and downs, but you got to just keep pushing forward. And I'm sure you and I will continue to have those conversations. Okay. I gotta go back to something and make a couple comments in your benefit. When we got into that summer of training and you had talked about getting out on the track with guys that knew how to run, you know, number one, it's humbling when you can't keep up with somebody. But what we didn't talk about is the end of that summer. You were literally running away from a Big Ten champion sprinter. And that's a testament to the work that you put in, but it's also, you know, a testament to what high quality speed training will do for you. Because if you would have had that at the beginning of the summer, the results would have been much, much different. And I pulled the other kid aside. I think we were running 150s, and I pulled him aside and I said, "Hey, you know, you all right? You're not feeling good today?" And he's like, "I'm trying. I can't keep up with him." So you had it in you the whole time. We just had to get it out of you. And then something that was kind of funny that I just thought of while we were talking is, tell me again at Louisville what the fall competition was called.
Oh, the Omaha Challenge.
The Omaha Challenge, where you did a number of different events and you were broken into teams. But I remember one of the events was a 400-meter dash. And, you know, you were pretty, high and mighty coming off your summer of training, speed training. And I remember you calling me because you got second place. And you were disappointed that you got beat, and the kid that beat you was a state champion 400. So yeah, that goes back to that mindset where, you know, you were competitive, which helps all those things out. So you got to have that side of it as well. You got to be confident. You got to believe in yourself. And when I say believe in yourself, at an emotional level, you truly have to believe that you can accomplish it. What advice would you give to a young player that maybe 12, 13, 14, that wants to have a baseball career, wants to go on to the college level?
Yeah, to me, that's like such a hard question because there's just so many possible answers. But at the end of the day, it's and I said it about Mookie, I think it's relentless positivity and relentless work. Like, you just can't stop working. Guys are just so skilled, so strong, so fast, that these kids, you don't have the luxury of taking 6 months or a year off of serious training and serious, you know, skilled work. Well, I was going to say one of my favorite things, and I heard it in high school, and, you know, I hate being the guy who's like, "Well, I heard this quote and it carried me for years," but, you know, as cheesy as it is, it's true. I remember I read the Mamba Mentality, I think it was my senior year, and maybe even before that. And he's talking about how it's Kobe's talking about how it's lonely at the top. And I didn't really know what he meant. But then that senior year, I was so invested in just becoming the best athlete, baseball, basketball player I could be. I kind of started to realize as the year went on, I was like, you know what? It is pretty lonely at the top. Like, if you want to be that good, you have to separate yourself from people, and you have to, you know, you have to drop things to go train. You have to drop things to go shoot free throws, whatever it is. And no one else wants to do that. And that's okay. But if you want to be the guy that makes it, you have to do those things. So it can be a little lonely, but I would argue and maybe advise younger kids, if you're feeling lonely, it's probably not the worst thing. You know, if you're getting those reps in, if you're doing the right things, you can't expect people to join you.
I remember you telling me, so at a young age, you were not a baseball player. Didn't you kind of start out golfing?
Yeah. Yeah. Way back in the day, I was more of a golfer than baseball. I did both, but yeah, more golf.
Okay. When did you start seeing I mean, were you always good at baseball, or was it something where you just kept getting better?
As a young kid, I think I was naturally good at most sports. Honestly, it probably took me until freshman, sophomore year of high school to kind of realize that, you know, I might have something here with baseball. I might, you know, I think it was after I grew, truthfully. Once I grew, I think it gave me a little confidence, like, okay, I'm bigger, stronger, faster. Like I could compete with these guys, but I was definitely a late bloomer. I remember my dad always brings it up still. I used to complain in middle school. I'd be like, why do I have to do all these extra things? And then I'm not as good as all my teammates. And he'll say it to this day. He's like, you know, that was the greatest thing that could have happened to you, because it just builds good habits. And 3-4 years later, I just watched myself kind of pass a bunch of people.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the golf. You and I have been on a golf course a couple times. You made a little switch in golf a year or so ago. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I've been golfing maybe 5 years, if you take out my early days. And, you know, the hard part was we get Mondays off during the season. And everyone in baseball likes to golf, if those of you don't know. So, you know, I'd swing right-handed Tuesday through Sunday at baseball, and then I'd go to the golf course on Monday and swing right-handed. So not only was I, you know, compromising my body a little and tweaking some things in my back or whatever it is, but it was just mentally hard to do. And so this offseason, this last one, I was like, you know what? I need to make this fun again. I need to make sure from a body standpoint, I'm moving better. And so I just switched to lefty one day. And I, you know, it was one of the greatest things I ever did in sports. It took the expectations out of the game for me. It brought back the early days of joy. I'm rotating my body the opposite direction, which there have to be benefits for that. And it makes for a great story.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've got so many people out there trying to play the game of golf and beating their heads against the wall because they're shooting 117. And you're a guy that was shooting in the 70s right-handed and just decided to scrap that and play left-handed. Thought that was worth mentioning. It's pretty incredible. I think if I tried to switch, and I play right-handed, I'm naturally left-handed. I think if I tried to switch, I'd be that 117 or greater for a long time. So Cooper, great to have you on the show. Appreciate your insight and appreciate you willing to take the time to talk to us. Plans for the rest of the offseason?
Now I got about 12 pounds to go. I'm trying to throw on some weight, so lift heavy for the next 3.5-4 weeks, and then slowly start moving fast and get back into baseball activity. Try to come back and have a healthy year. You know, it was not the healthiest of years for me, physically or mentally. So that's pretty much the only goal for next year, regardless of how it goes, regardless of, you know, if I finally make the last jump or not, just be able to be out there and compete and have a good mentality about it.
Yeah. Well, like we've talked about, it's all between the ears. Want to thank you again. Appreciate you being here and wish you the best of luck. Thank you again for joining Building the Athlete. Great episode with Cooper Bowman of the Oakland Athletics. A lot of things covered. Great to talk about a hitter's mindset and what training looks like at the professional level. We talked an awful lot about speed development and how important it is to any athlete, not just baseball players. Speed kills, and obviously we found out that speed pays. So it was good having Cooper on. Again, Scott Benson. BensonSportsTraining.com. You can go to our socials, Benson Sports Training. Give us a like, give us a follow, leave a comment. If you have ideas that you'd like to have a show, that you'd like to hear, something you're dealing with that you'd like some clarity on, drop us a comment. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, thanks a lot. We'll see you again.